everybody. I'm an alcoholic named Caleb. And this is an awesome group, you know. It's really impressive. Every time I come over here, it's really moving. Tampa's young people group has got a really special thing going on here. And definitely shouldn't take it for granted. I got sober on the 4th of July in 05. And went to a treatment center down here in Tampa. And the fellow that asked me to speak tonight, I actually went to that treatment center with him. And that's when my new life began. I was raised in Indiana. And I had a pretty normal childhood. I came from a good family. My family liked to drink a lot, for sure, you know. And to me, that was normal. That's what families did. They got together on the weekends, and they had big parties, and they drank, and everybody had fun. There normally wasn't a lot of fighting or arguing. There was normally a lot of gossip, and he said, she said stuff, and me and my brothers and my cousins, we just thought that was normal. I'm pretty nervous right now, by the way. But the same guy that pressured the fellow that was up here earlier pressured me into speaking tonight, you know. And, I kind of had the same response at first. It's like, you know, I'm a pretty busy guy. I got a lot going on. But then I remembered, you know, that you never say no to this program. It saved my life, and that's why I'm here this evening. Without it, I've got nothing, and that's the reality. For me, I was always kind of like a people pleaser, and mainly just for, like, my dad's affection, I think, for some reason. I always wanted him to be proud of me. If he said jump, I was like, how high? That whole little, you know, cat and mouse game. And he was a heavy drinker, he calls himself. And I saw a lot of that growing up, and some things that were definitely off key. But like I said, that's just what I knew as a child, and that's how we did things or whatever, you know. I never really asked any questions because that wasn't my place. I was the kid, and I needed to keep my mouth shut, and so that's what I did. Along the way, you know, I was the youngest of three boys. My poor mom had to put up with all of us, and she kind of had her place in the relationship too, you know, of just being submissive and doing kind of what she was told to. It was really odd, but I just thought, you know, that's how things were supposed to be ran, and everybody loved each other, and we went to church on Sunday, so everything must be great. Along the way, I started realizing, you know, that I'm building these emotions and feelings and relationships with others and challenges in life. And to start off with, I did really well. You know, I was a straight-A student in elementary school, never had any problems with doing my homework or what my parents asked me to do. I had good friends. And along the way, I discovered this thing that we would call the easier, softer way. And for some reason, that was attractive to me, you know. And I don't know why, because I was smart enough, you know, and whatnot. But in school, I began, by the time I was in junior high, it was like a great idea to, you know, go ahead and start trying to be dishonest and cheat on tests and whatnot. And so I really started to try and hone in on those skills over the next 4, 5, 6 years, you know, to get me through high school, because I had a lot of other important things that I needed to do with my time. And I loved going to school. I wasn't one of the kids that was like, you know what, I'm skipping school this week, you know, because I wanted to hang out and get drunk and high with all my buddies. It was like, I'm going to go to school and get drunk and high there, because that's where we all go, you know, and that's like, that's where we can make things happen. And I did that. And by the time I was a junior, I think I'd lost like 50 pounds, you know, and I'm walking around the house and I got my hat pulled down, and, you know, my pants are falling off. My mom's like, Caleb, put a belt on, you know, and denial ran really deep in my family. And there wasn't ever a lot of questions asked. And that was great for somebody in my situation, because I had a lot of fun things that I was doing, and I really didn't want somebody, you know, get interfering with that. And so it worked well. The problem was is that I started to kind of feel like, you know, man, I'm really kind of losing a little bit of control, and this is coming from a guy who always thought he was in control. And so by the time I was a senior in high school, I left my family, and I went to Columbus, Ohio, and I went to a private school. And when I got there, that's where I really learned to love alcohol. The kids had lots of money that came from rich families. They were always gone on vacations, and we had the nice houses, and we'd get the kegs, and we'd get drunk. And then whenever I would get to come back to Indiana to my family, you know, I would partake in all the other types of activities. And that was like I was living the dream, no doubt about it. You know, it was great. Who cared if I flunked home ec, you know? What is a guy like me even taking home ec for? But I was, because that was the easier, softer way, you know? And who cares? My dad's not going to be upset that I got an F in home ec, because I'm not supposed to be taking it anyways. And but that's what guys like me do, you know, that have problems with alcohol and don't realize it. You know, I was completely blind to what alcohol had done to my family and what it was doing to me, you know. I graduated high school, almost top 10% of my class. I never cracked a book. I don't even remember what I got on the SAT, but I did decent, you know. And I got into a state college, Indiana State University. Some people call it I screwed up. And ISU, you know, I screwed up. And that's what I did, you know. I went there. And I had other motives when I got to school. It wasn't about getting a bachelor's degree or any type of degree. I wanted to make money. I wanted to have sex. And I wanted to have a good time. And that's what my parents were going to pay for, because see, I didn't get any scholarships in high school or anything like that. And since I came from a good family, I knew that the opportunity was there for me. And why not take advantage of it? You know, and I'd gotten down this like technique that I had, you know, of like walking up and giving mom a hug and telling her I loved her, you know, and I'm really going to try my best, mom. And she would just look at me, all right, Caleb, you know, you do that, sweetie. And she's still the same way today. She hasn't changed, you know. My mom has shown me unconditional love through anything that I've been through in my life. And she's really a great woman. And she's one of the reasons why I'm sober today, no doubt about it, you know. She's allowed me to grow spiritually, and that's been a huge blessing for me. Back to college, I'm there my freshman year, and I think I got something like a 3.0 or whatever. I wasn't a blackout drinker. I never blacked out my whole famous career. But I did real good my freshman year, and I think it was because a lot of it was remedial from my senior year in high school when I went to the private school, you know. I definitely knew how to drink, you know, and I could seem to be able to manage the alcohol and still get up and go to some classes and things like that. But by the time I was a sophomore in college, the progression of my disease was starting to show up in my life on a daily basis, and I was in complete denial about it, and very naive to what was happening, because my motives were still the same as what they were when I got to college. You know, I didn't know what goals were. I knew growing up that success meant, you know, to have family and have money and all those things, you know, that we kind of put up, you know, as what success is. And so that's what I was going to do. I always had a backup plan, and I kind of figured that college wasn't going to work for me. And so I got involved in doing some illegal activities and whatnot, and made some money, and some friends of mine around me, you know, were starting to get in some trouble by the law, and I was starting to get a little nervous. And my sophomore year, my GPA, it was like .000. I flunked everything. And I remember at the end of the year, my dad saying, "You're not even legally drunk on your GPA here, man. You know, you're gonna have to either pay for this whole college education yourself or whatever. But I'm done with you, you know." And I'm thinking, well, if I can take some of the money that I've made here, I can still go to class. And if I still go to class, then I've still got, you know, some customers and all this. And so I was putting together my business plan of how I was going to destroy my life, and I didn't even know it because I was pretty intelligent. And so, and that's what I did. I ended up getting like a part-time job, and I was I had my own car, and I was putting rims on it, you know. And I'm like going home on the weekends, you know, "Mom, I think maybe I need like $20, you know, just to get me through next week." "Okay, Caleb," you know, and she'd give me the money, you know, because I was good at manipulating, and I didn't need the money, but I didn't want them to think that I was doing what I was doing, because I still cared about what my family thought. I just didn't really care about myself. And that's a scary place, you know, for us to be, is when we really don't give a damn about ourselves. And that was the reality for me. I never thought about consequences of how I live. I never thought about how I hurt other people. And it was because my life was completely self-centered, and I was selfish, and it was the me program, you know. And what ended up happening was I had to end up using that backup plan that I had. I flunked out of college. My friends were getting busted, and so I did what any alcoholic would do, and I joined the family business. And that worked for, you know, like 4 years until my mom fired me. And that hurt, you know. Basically what happened was I couldn't show up to work on Mondays for some reason. And I had like a 9-to-5 job. I sold insurance, and I had a 9-to-5 job, and I had, you know, benefits, and I had 2 weeks paid vacation, and I had all these things, an hour paid lunch. So I worked like 35 hours a week, but I couldn't make it on Mondays. Usually I wouldn't be able to come in, and then like the rest of the week I probably couldn't show up until like maybe 9:10 or 9:15, because I'm doing all these things at my house before I go to work, and that's important, you know. I got to get my mind right before I get in there, you know, and act like I'm doing something today. And that's what I did. I just shuffled, you know, things around at the office, and I was not productive. I spun my wheels, and I was a wreck. But so the progression of my disease, it just continued to grow and grow and grow. And I thought that this was like a really great fit for me, because my dad being there, he drank a lot. And my oldest brother, he was there, he drank a lot. And so I was there, I drank a lot. We could go play golf, we could go to company golf outings, we could go to the bar after we got off work. And we did a lot of things like that, and it was fun. You know, and I was still playing with all the other things that I did also. And they were just drinking, and they were like, "Man, you can drink, kid," you know. And I did, nonstop, you know, as much as I could. I tilted the bottle. It didn't really matter what it was. It started off as beer, you know, and I drank a lot of beer. And then the older I got, I started liking liquor. And you know, I never once thought that I had a problem with alcohol. I thought that it was a problem with the other things that I did. And if I could learn how to kind of, you know, manage some of that stuff, that these little hitches in my life were, you know, not going to happen to me. And my main thing was I just didn't want to get arrested. I didn't want to, you know, end up having to go to prison or whatever, which is really insane when you look at the things that I did. That was like one of my fears. So why would you be doing the things that a guy like me was doing? And my dad got in a drinking and driving accident about 4 years into me working at the insurance office, and he was lifelined, and he was in a blackout or whatnot, and he about killed himself. But he made it through it. And my mom, I didn't know, but she had been going and seeing a psychologist because she was really struggling with how she was being affected, you know, with all this alcohol and the drugs and everything. And she had put together a plan for me. And I remember going up, I'd been up a while, and I went up to Indianapolis, and I saw my dad, and he's coming out of surgery, and he's a wreck, you know. And it was rough to see him that way. And I'm ripped, you know, I'm out of my mind at this point. And my mom says, "You know, Caleb, I think Monday, you know, you need to take a drug test." whenever, you know, you get to work. And I thought that was a horrible idea. And I tried to explain to her that right now is not a good time, you know, because Dad's not at work, and me and my brother, we really need to step up to the plate here and handle some things, and we'll deal with that stuff later. I know you're upset, Mom. And she says, yeah, and I really think that I'm the one in charge here, and you're going to need to do that. And so I did it, and guess what? I flunked. I didn't do so great. And I remember feeling hurt. I was angry at her. I said, how could you do this to me? At this time in my life, you know, when Dad needs me the most. I mean, my dad can't even, like, say his name, you know, but he needs me the most, and I was very resentful, and I didn't even know what a resentment was, you know. I didn't even know what that was all about, and I didn't find out any of these things about how I felt or how I processed things until I got sober, because I was so freaking in left field that it was crazy, you know. But my mom, she continued to put these little tests in my life over the next month or so. And eventually what happened was is I continued to either just not go take it, or I wouldn't do so well on them. And she says, Caleb, you know, you no longer can work here until you get better, until you get well. And then when you get well, you can come back and your job will be here. And I flipped her off. And, you know, I went into a state of depression for about 30 days. You know, I couldn't get out of bed. I didn't use, I didn't drink. I was just like there, you know, at my house. And I guess I was probably like 24 or 25 when this happened. And, you know, I had my own house, had my own car, I had all these payments that I'd, you know, acquired. To be successful in life, you know, all these things that I thought I needed, because I needed a lot of things. I was a pretty needy guy. And what happened was, me laying in bed, you know, being depressed for that long, wasn't going to pay the bills, you know. And I had things stacking up on me, and people would come into my house and knock on the door, and I wouldn't answer it. They would call me, and I didn't answer. And that was really the first time that I'd ever dealt with depression in my life. And I just felt like numb. I had to sleep because I didn't want to deal with reality. I didn't want to deal with where my life had taken me, and so I just slept. Finally, I had a great idea that I could finally get out of bed if I went back to doing the things that I did, and I really had to start getting another plan put together, because that's what my life was about, Caleb's plan and what was going to work. And so that's what I did. I got all hopped up on the things that I took and drank, and I started thinking, you know, and what I did was I went back to doing what I learned when I was in college. And I went down to El Paso, Texas, and I met some people that I knew, and I decided I was going to be an entrepreneur, and I was going to, you know, do great. And I thought that I was, you know, and it lasted about 16 months. And it hit the fan is what happened, you know. It's a miracle that I'm even here today. Along that way of me living that lifestyle and running this business that I was doing, you know, it was great for an alcoholic, because, you know, the ego and the boost and all that, you know, I really felt like people needed me, and I really felt like I was important, and I thought that I had the clout, you know, and all these things. And what it was self-delusion. It was insanity. It was totally out of control and wrong. And I know that today, you know, what I did was not only affect myself, but I affected a lot of people around me, you know, and a lot of families crumbled, you know, from some of the things that I was involved with. That was tough to live with when I first got sober, realizing some of the things that I did, you know. But what happened was 16 months into it, I'm doing great, you know, financially doing awesome, and the feds kicked my door in, you know. And I wasn't home. I came home to about 50 of them at my house. And, you know, they threw me down in the snow and handcuffed me and put shotguns to my head and sent me into my garage and told me that I needed to get a job with the FBI, pretty much, or I was going to prison for, you know, 20 years. They said, we've got you. on conspiracy. And, you know, these are the people that just held out the papers. These are the people that are, you know, going to testify against you. And I'm looking at the paper, and I know who these people are, and I know there's a pretty good chance, you know. But I never thought that, you know, if you deal with the cartel, you'll never get in trouble. You know, it's always the guy below you that's going to tell on you. You know, those are the ones you got to watch out for. And in my case, it was the opposite. I got snitched down on. Which didn't make any sense because I was a white guy in Indiana, and, you know, all the Mexicans, I thought they loved me, you know. But the truth of the matter was I wasn't anything to them, and I really wasn't important, and I was just this little plot in the middle of their whole thing that they were just, you know, I was the pawn that they were moving around on the chessboard, and I meant nothing to them. And I thought, I'm in big trouble. You know, I'm in the middle of some interstate trafficking, and I'm screwed. And they started talking to me about, oh, well, it works on point systems, and if you tell us where it is, you know, you'll get to take like 2 years off your sentence. And that may not sound like a lot, but when you're doing 17 and a half, 15's a lot better. And I know that they're being honest with me. They didn't lie to me. They didn't try and, you know, deceive me. And you know, I thought for a second maybe I should tell them where the things are, you know. Unfortunately, I didn't ever even get to do that because somebody in my house had already told them where it was, and they took them down the road. And I exercised my right for my attorney, and they took me to jail, and they booked me on possession of marijuana. And the next day, there was a lot more charges than that, you know. And there was a fella from Texas that was standing up there in the courts, you know, right along with me, that was getting charged. And I thought, you know, this is the end, you know. 2 months before all this happened, I'd had a son that was born. I didn't even know if he was mine. I thought maybe he was. And I'm sitting in jail. They put me in with a $100,000 bond, and maximum of 59 years is what I was looking at. Now, to a guy like me, that meant nothing, because the state of Indiana wanted to give me 59, and the feds wanted to give me 20, and I just knew that I could probably beat the state case, and I didn't want the feds to pick it up. And I had to make another plan, and I got this attorney, and I paid him a whole lot of money, and he started saying, yeah, we can get you to a prison that's pretty close to your parents' house, and, you know, all these things. And that was pretty scary, you know. And anytime somebody even said the word federal or anything like that, you know, like, I got sick to my stomach, and it was off to my bunk, you know, because I knew, you know, it's like, man, I just had a son born, and I'll be getting out when he's graduating high school. But my ego was so strong that it was like, this is what you do, you know. Whenever you get involved in something like this, you know, you if you can't swallow the pill, don't put it in your mouth. And so I'm going to ride out for this, even when these people all told on me, you know. And so that's what I opted to do, and I sat in jail for a little while. Finally, the feds didn't pick it up, and I got out on a $100,000 bond. And I thought, you know, these suckers ain't as slick as they think they are, you know. And in fact, I'm probably smarter than the FBI at this point. You know, because I'm pretty good at what I do, you know. And what happened was, they took all my money, and what they didn't take, I had to pay attorneys. And I ended up coming to a nice, fine establishment down here in Florida to get sober. But when I first got on bond, it was like, you know, all right, I'm just going to do things a little different than what I was doing, because they know that I was doing things this way, so I'm going to go a different route with it. And for the next year, I was still completely insane, got pulled over about every other time that I got in my car and got searched, and it was off the chain, you know. And I was so numb, you know, that I didn't process any of this stuff. And what happened was, my attorney, he says, you know, you need to probably go to the psychologist and talk to him. He's on your team, this and that. And I'm like, okay. So I'm like paying this guy money, and I'm talking to him. And he's like, you know, you seem like a good guy, Caleb. It's a shame that you're caught up in all this stuff, and we're going to get through this, and you're going to get your life back, and whatnot. And but there was this common denominator. I couldn't stay sober, and I keep going to this guy, and I'm talking to him. He's like, you know, man, maybe you should go to the hospital. They got this little meeting down there, and it's supposed to be a good one. And I'm like, yeah, you know, no, I'm all right, you know. And I continued to go in and see this guy, and I was just totally messed up. And he says, you know, you should probably go see this certified alcohol and addictions counselor. And I said, okay. He says, no, with this fella, he actually works for the prosecutor, so you want to be kind of careful about what you say to him, but just tell him about your drinking, you know, and your childhood and all those things. And so I did, you know. I went in to see this guy, and he, you know, got like the long ponytail and looked like he just smoked a joint or something before I stepped in there. And he says, you know, Caleb, I need $75 cash from you. He says, I don't take check or credit card. And it was like, it's about money. This whole thing's about money, you know. And the only way I'm going to get out of this is to keep giving these people all this money, because that's all they care about. And so I gave him the 75 bucks, and I sat down and I talked to this guy, and I told him my life story, you know, minus the illegal things that I was doing. I told him about how much I drank, why I drank, you know. And he looked at me and ended up, and he says, well, Caleb, he says, you know, this is a pretty clear-cut and dry case. And I thought, man, this is awesome. This guy's on my team, and I'm good. He's going to tell the prosecutor, look, this is a good guy, comes from a good family, and there's no reason that we need to, you know, to just throw the whole case out. And what he said was, he's clear-cut and dry. He said, you don't stand a snowball's chance in hell of getting sober. And I'd recommend the state prosecuting attorney you do 16 years in a state penitentiary, because then maybe a guy like you might have a chance of staying sober and being a productive member of society. And so I soaked that in for like 0.2 seconds, stood up and did what any alcoholic would do, kicked the chair off the wall, flipped him off, and told him it was the worst 75 bucks I ever spent in my life, and he didn't know who I was, you know? And I went walking out of there, and it's like I hit the bricks, you know, and I'm like, it hit me, you know? And what it was, you know, I realized at that point in time that I was no different than anybody else that came in this guy's office Monday through Friday. I had a serious problem, and if I didn't do something about it, I was going to prison. And so it came down to me having to make another big choice. Do I want to go to prison, or do I want to sell my home and go to treatment? Now, I didn't really want to get sober, but they're telling me that I got to do these things to keep from going to prison. So I sold my house, and I went to treatment, and I remember my first resentment in recovery was being upset that I spent all that money to go to treatment when I just could have started coming to AA, you know? I was like, man, I spent another 30 grand, you know. It could have been a lot cheaper if I just started going to these meetings, because the truth of the matter is, you know, that place was great for me, and I met some great people there, and it gave me some time to soak up, you know, this thing that we call recovery. But what it did was, you know, this treatment center, I had to get through my fifth step before I left. It was a 90-day treatment center, and I had to get through my fifth step. And by the time I, you know, had gotten a sponsor and I started going through these steps, I started realizing, you know what? I'm the jerk. Everybody else, you know, seemed to be the problem, and I could always make all these excuses about how they hurt me and all this, but the reality is, you know, I've got to surrender, you know, I've got to do the footwork here, and I got to try this new way of life, because if I don't, you know, I'm going to end up in prison. It wasn't really about, like, changing my ways at that point. It was just, I got to stay out of prison, and I did find out that the little boy was my son. And Caleb Jr., he's 7 now, and he's never seen me drink or get high, you know. It was just total chaos. My life was so crazy at that point. He was taken by the state of Indiana. You know, I was out on bond. I'm down here in Florida, you know, and I'm hopping in cars with these people that I don't know, you know, and they're looking at me like, man, you really sound like a redneck, you know, and I'm like, I'm going to try this thing out, you know. That's all that I knew was, for some reason, I started going to these meetings and I started seeing other people that were even younger than me, you know, and they were sober. And, like, the competitiveness in me was like, you know what, if this guy can do it, I can do it, you know. And I remember coming to this meeting, you know, back when it was over at the other church down in the basement, and people sharing and me hearing people talk, you know, or hearing people talk and thinking, man, that's so right on, you know, and this guy's got 90 days. This guy's got 90 days, man. You know, this is awesome. And I'm like, you know, 60 days sober or whatever. And what I did was I just kept coming back, you know. And I made it through that program at HCC here in Tampa. And it was the best money that I ever spent in my life. You know, it really was. That place, it was just it changed everything for me. It led me and pointed me in the right direction around some people. I was really fortunate. The guys that were in there with me, you know, really wanted this thing too. And we just started building a support network, you know, and started going to meetings and talking and being honest a little bit, you know, which was really strange for me because I was like, honesty? What is that? You know, that's not cool at all, you know. And, you know, it was like, oh, well, I think maybe, you know, John Doe's drinking over there. Well, don't worry about it. Don't tell on him. You know, and what I started finding out was that whole, like, snitch thing's, like, over, you know. If either you want this thing or you don't, you know. So we got no right to enable people, you know, that are in the program. And that was great, you know, what you were saying. You know, it's like, man, you're making me want to drink, man. You know, you're pushing me in the wrong direction. No, the reality is alcohol kills. You know, it's chronic, it's progressive, and it's fatal. And this program's the most effective way, I feel, you know, to dampen that, you know. And the obsession for me to drink was gone at, I would say, about 90 days, 100 days. I didn't want to drink, and I didn't want to use anymore. And these steps that I was taking in my life, you know, with a sponsor, you know, I was starting to feel better, you know, and I was still delusional, don't get me wrong. I remember, like, praying, you know, because it was all about, I can't be my will, it's got to be God's will. And I would pray for something at night, and I'd wake up in the morning, and I'd have the answer that I wanted, you know, and I'd be off running with it, and there'd be more chaos in my life and all this and that. But I kept coming back, and I didn't drink no matter what, you know. And what's happened is this program's taught me what success really is, you know, and it's not about money. It's about being honest. It's about, you know, being a good friend. You know, it's about being responsible, accountable. All those things that I couldn't do, you know. Like, I have no problem getting up and going to work today. It's amazing. In fact, I'm there early. You know, I'm in college today, and I'm doing really good, and I'm not cheating. You know, this program has set me up for success, and it's not been my way. It's just been the way that it's laid out in the book, you know. And some people are like, that's a little weird, man, you know, that you're just going to, like, read this book, you know, and you think that it's going to change your life, and it's going to change the way that you are. But see, I had the willingness and, you know, the open-mindedness that, you know what, if it worked for all these other people, why can't it work for me? And it has. That's the truth of this thing, is my life has completely changed. I'm not even the same guy that I used to be. You know, I'm whoever I was supposed to be when I was a little kid before I started getting, you know, started wiling out and everything. I'm finally, like, I missed out on that, you know, for like 13 or 14 years, and now I'm starting to turn into who, you know, God wanted me to be. And by doing that, you know, I'm married now. My wife's here tonight supporting me, you know, and we've got three kids. We've got a little girl due next month. And, you know, miracles are happening in my life every day. And don't get me wrong, it's tough. You know, life's tough, you know, and it hurts. And these things called feelings sometimes suck. But a lot of the time it's awesome. You know, and that's what I missed out on. In those 13, 14 years, you know, that I was out there running wild, I never felt nothing. I was more nervous tonight getting up in front of you guys than I was when the feds kicked my door in. You know what I'm saying? Because I didn't feel anything. It was like, you know what I mean? Whatever, you know. Lock me up and throw me away. Well, I'm worthless anyway. So that's kind of how I felt about myself. And today, you know, I don't feel that way about myself. I know I'm a good man. I know that, you know, I'm a good friend. I'm a good son. And I'm not perfect, you know. And when I saw that in the program, that it was about progress, not perfection, it was like, you know what? This thing's for me, I think, you know. And I kept reading through the book, and it's like, man, I really relate with that. The one about kicking the doggy door, you know, and acting, you know, all wild like that, and the anger. And it was like, man, that's me. And then, hold on, Bill's talking about fair-weathered friends. Whew, that was my life. Nobody cared about me, you know. They wanted something from me, or they wanted to use me in a certain way, and I wanted to do the same thing to them. You know, I was no better than them or worse than. It was, you know, it just was what it was. And when I started seeing things a little more clearly, I was able to grow, you know, and along the way, over these last 5 years, along the way, all the tough things that I've went through, you know, since I haven't picked up, I've continued to grow spiritually, you know, and I've walked through those tough times, and it's made me stronger. And I'm telling you, man, you're in the right place, you know. I want to party with you. Five of them, you know. This is a spiritual program, you know, and somehow you're sitting here tonight, and don't take that for granted, you know. I've been able to have a little bit of wisdom along the way because I've only picked up one white chip, which is, you know, a blessing for me because, you know, I don't know why my higher power has chosen for me to stay sober, but I've just continued to try and, you know, follow that path. And when I've gotten off a little bit, I've recognized it and I've gotten back on it, you know. But there's been a lot of people before me, you know, that, oh, I quit going to meetings, I quit talking to my sponsor, and I got drunk, you know, and I heard that. And, you know, there is times in my sobriety where I get away from going to meetings as much, you know, and I realize, uh-oh, you know, I need to get back in the middle of the boat here or I'm going to be in trouble, you know. And so that wisdom there that I've been able to, this is probably the only wise thing I've done my whole life, by the way. But, you know, it's allowed me to continue to grow. And I love this program, man. It, like I said, it's done everything for me. And the blessings, you know, that have come from this program, that's the hardest thing for me to deal with, you know. It's like, wow, I got a wife today. Wow, I got a family. Wow, I'm going to school. You know, wow, I got friends that care. You know, and all those things, it's hard for a guy like me to balance because I don't have a lot of experience at it, see. My whole life, I just ran from everything and whatnot. And today, you know, to take all those things and, like, try and put them in my life, you know, and make everything work, you know, it's tough, you know. But I recognize the only reason why I have all those things is because of this place, because of this program, you know. And if I wasn't sober, none of that stuff would be here, you know. My wife, I always joke with her sometimes. I'm like, look, you don't even know who you married, you know, because I'm a different guy. I am, you know, and thank God for that because I was miserable and I was really no good to anybody. And what happened with my case was I ended up, they made me a felon. They gave me, you know, 8 years, do four, one served, and I did 3 years of paper in Florida. And it was scary. I was like, that was my big thing when I was first getting sober. How am I going to stay, you know, how am I going to get through this 3 years of probation, you know? And my sponsor said, just don't drink. That's it. And you know what? Probation was the easiest thing that I've ever done in my life because I was sober. I had nothing to hide. It's like, you know, I'd even tell my boss, hey, I got to go to probation today. Okay, Caleb, go ahead. Good luck with that. You know, and I would show up, I'd pay him the money, and I was out of there. I was living life right for once. You know, all those fears that I came in here with, man, when I did the steps, man, all that stuff just, it was gone, you know. And the longer that I stayed sober, the financial fears finally, you know, kind of, it's going to be okay. The lights are still on, you know, things are going to be all right. You've been through worse. And there's nothing for me like talking to another alcoholic. You know, when I'm really getting twisted upstairs, I'll notice, you know, like if I go a little while without doing a 10th step or something, I'll notice I'm getting a little squirrely, you know, and I'll start having to stop and reflect and think about what's going on in my life. Why do I feel this way? Am I harming somebody? Am I being selfish, you know? And when I get down to the bottom of that, then I can start getting some serenity, you know, and if I start talking to my sponsor about those things, you know, it's amazing, you know, just being able to talk with somebody honestly and having that trust to know that person's not going to put your business out on Front Street, you know. I was always worried. It was like, you know, I was always good. I'm good. How are you, Caleb? I'm good. I'm straight. I'm good. How you doing? You know? The reality is today, it's okay if I'm not good, you know? I can say, you know what, I feel like crap, man. I'm freaking out. I am freaking out, you know? And I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. Imagine that. And they're like, it's all right, you know? People can calm me down and give me some suggestions or, hey, man, check out this part in the book. This may help you out. You know what? You're right, man, you know? Those are the solutions. It tells us in the book there is a solution, and guess what? There is. They're not lying. This thing works, and I think that's all I got tonight. I really want to thank you guys for having me come over and speak. Like I said, man, this group is awesome. I got a chance to go with a bunch of you to Icky Pond, Atlanta a couple years ago. That was sweet, you know? And it's just, you guys are really blessed, man. Don't take it for granted. When I went home to Indiana a couple years ago, there was like two meetings that week, and there was like eight guys down in the basement, you know, and I was the youngest guy there, and I'm not really that young anymore. But, you know, this is an awesome thing, man. And so there's a lot of people in these rooms that care. And, you know, so when one of them come up to you, if you're a newcomer, and they're like, hey, man, what's your name, man? You got a phone number or whatever? Don't freak out. It's okay. You know? They're not going to try and rob you or anything like that, man. Yeah, you're good over there, dude. Get numbers. Talk to people. Go have coffee. It's all right, you know. And don't isolate, man. That's the worst thing, man. Just meet people. Everybody here is, you know, out to help each other. Nobody's trying to hurt one another. And get out there and make this thing happen, you know, and pass it on. Once you get sober, you know, you got to be able to realize, don't be selfish and run with it, you know. Always try and turn back and try and help somebody out. And that's you know, keep coming back. You got to keep coming back, man. So thanks so much.